Hey everybody, Nate here. Before the show, I just wanted to take a minute to talk about our sponsor, the Snack Nanny. The Snack Nanny is the latest, greatest spill-proof bowl. It's the first snack bowl for kids with a self-closing door. The Snack Nanny allows kids to snack freely without overeating, keeps kids entertained, and prevents them from creating a mess for mom and dad to clean up. Kids and parents love the Snack Nanny. It's easy to use, easy to clean, and includes portion control features that only the Snack Nanny offers. To order, go to www.snacknanny.com. or order from Amazon. Remember, you support our sponsors and they support us. Thanks and Nihei Debiru. Welcome back to Chop Talk. This is your host, Nate England. We are still a few ratings short of showing up on the iTunes rankings. If you listen to the show on iTunes, please write a review and give us a 5-star rating. Last weekend, I was in Wisconsin to visit a friend in Green Bay, but it would be a shame to let a personal trip go by without getting in a good workout. So I stopped by Authentic Ancient Arts, located in happening downtown Waukesha, Wisconsin. The director of the school is Kyoshi Neil Stoltzmark. Mr. Stoltzmark has traveled extensively to study, demonstrate, compete, and teach the martial arts throughout the U.S., Canada, Europe, Australia, Japan, South Africa, and Okinawa. Mr. Stoltzmark currently holds the rank of 8th Dan in Shorin-Ryu Shorin-Kan Karate and a student of Shigeru Nakazato. He's also a practitioner of Matryoshi Kabuto and is the president of the Okinawa Kabuto Doshi Rinsei Kai and has been appointed as the successor of his teacher, Sensei Yoshiaki Gakia. At the beginning of the show, Mr. Stoltzmark talks about how he got started in karate and kabuto, before talking about his competition career and his signature cartwheel kick. In the second half of the show, he talks about his travels to train and to teach, before discussing the proposal for the new Budokan in Okinawa. In just a few weeks, from October 17th to 19th, Mr. Stoltzmark will be holding the 5th Annual Kabuto Friendship Gashku Seminar in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And from June 11th through 14th of 2015, Mr. Stoltzmark will hold his annual Warrior Gashku Seminar, where he will be hosting the head of the Shorin-Ryu Shorin-Kan style all the way from Okinawa, Japan, 10th Dan Minoru Nakazato. For those of you interested in learning more about Mr. Stoltzmark and his dojo, or to register for the seminars, you can visit www.AuthenticAncientArts.com. Thanks for listening, and enjoy the show.
Well, Mr. Stoltzmark, thanks for letting me stop by and work out on
short notice. I think the last time I saw you, it was I was walking down Kokusai Dori in Okinawa. I spotted you and Mark. I think it was your student Mark were there visiting and working out.
Okay.
Flagged you down. I think we went out for a couple of drinks and dinner, and that was about
maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay.
So. Thanks for letting me stop by.
My pleasure.
A real nice dojo.
Thank you.
Too. Beautiful.
Thank you.
You know, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how you got started in the martial arts. I mean, you practiced the Shorin-Ryu Shorin-Kan, but also the Matryoshi Kabuto, and you're really involved with both groups.
Right.
So, would you mind just talking about how you got started and how you got involved with those groups?
Sure. My first karate instructor who owned this dojo originally, his name was Daniel Schrader, and he's still active, and his teacher was Tadashi Yamashita.
Okay.
And Tadashi Yamashita was a student of, top student of Shigeru Nakazato, sensei,
okay.
And a student of Matryoshi Shinpo sensei.
Oh, wow.
So, and about the 1984, Sensei Schrader was going to actually get out of the running the dojo. He had two dojos and he was going to actually hand them both over to me, but he decided to keep one and I ended up taking this one over in 1985 officially.
Okay.
So it'll be my 30th year here next year.
Wow.
Yeah. But anyway, Sensei Yamashita did not practice. At this time I became a student of Sensei Yamashita during that 1984 period.
During the transition.
Yeah, during the transition. So did a lot of traveling with Sensei Yamashita. You know, around the world, Australia, Okinawa, Japan, all around the country, demonstrating and so on and so forth, became his demonstration partner. And because he never practiced much of the Nakazato Kobudo,
mm-hmm.
probably just one Sai Kata, was the only thing that he retained from that curriculum, and he taught the Matayoshi curriculum.
Okay.
And so when I went to Okinawa, I got to train with Matayoshi sensei and his students, and ended up never really training in the Nakazato Kobudo. So
in the Nakazato Kobudo, I went to the Big Shorin Rishonkan get together probably at about 2006-2007.
Okay.
And so that group has their own series of Kobudo katas and exercises and drills that are sort of part of that system. And a lot of the people that practice that karate also do that Kobudo.
Yeah, correct. Most do. Most of them do that Kobudo because it is Sensei Nakazato's. He calls it Kokusai Rengokai.
Okay.
International, Kobudo in there somewhere. Those guys do that. Once in a while I'll jump in and, when there's, just for the exercise and for some fun, but I really concentrated hard on the Matayoshi lineage curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
When Matayoshi sensei passed away in 1997, he appointed Yoshiaki Gakia to take over the system.
Now, Gakia sensei, at that time, he was the head instructor at the Hanbu Dojo, is
yes,
that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
And he held that position for 5 years and decided he was going to start his own association. So he resigned from that position, started his own association, and I had recently resigned from Sensei Yamashita's association.
Mm.
It was like days apart, if not even the same day. And we had been in contact, and we stayed in contact, and I said, can I be your first student and official student? And so that's how that started.
Wow, you're the first official student.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Of that association. So then, sadly, he had a stroke in 2000 and, 2011, I believe it was.
Okay. It was after I came back. I remember that.
Yeah, it was March of 2011. And at the he ended up paralyzed, functional 100% in the brain, but the left side's paralyzed, and he's unable to practice Kobudo anymore, so he had to come to the decision to retire, and he appointed me as the president of that his association. So,
well, that's great. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. It's kind of a bittersweet way to get it.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember I had a chance to work out with Gakia sensei a few times. I came to your big the summer Gashku where you had Gakia and Yogi here. I came with my teacher Shihan Walker, and we got to work out with him there for the first time. And then once or twice while I was living in Okinawa, I got to work out with Gakia and Yogi sensei a few more times than that. And he was both of them, but I mean, Gakia was really a great practitioner.
Yes.
And you could really tell he was a step above the other people that were doing Kobudo. So that's a real shame of that. I mean, he was an active guy. It's not like he was on the decline. He was still active and able to do everything.
Yeah, it was obviously a shock, a very young man in the early 60s, and he had just got back from Australia, and he was actually in his driveway building his wife a semisun, whatever they call it, little guitars.
The Okinawan banjo.
Yeah, exactly. And he was building him one, and he said he was concentrating really hard, and the next thing you know, he passed out, hit his head.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So.
But I know you were working out really closely to try to match all your Kobudo the way he was doing it.
Yeah,
100%. And so you've been continuing training. When Matayoshi Sr. died, a lot of, the same thing happened with that group, is my impression, that a lot of other karate groups, martial arts groups, there's a real scattering. So there's different Matayoshi groups going in different directions.
Yeah.
But Gakia was the head instructor at that time. And so have you been continuing traveling around and demonstrating his method of Kobudo around the world also?
Absolutely. And Gakia sensei spent the most time with Matayoshi sensei. So their kiai even sounded the same
okay.
to me. I'm fortunate enough to train with both of them. And Gakia's always promised and swore and made it a 100% effort to never change any of the techniques from Matayoshi sensei.
Mm.
All the kata is identical, and he really prided himself on that, and now I pride myself on doing it exactly the way Gakia sensei showed me. And I've trained with other guys that are high-ranking Matayoshi people as recently as April, and their technique is a little different, but everybody's is going to be a little bit different all the time. But like I say, I try to mimic 100% Gakia Sensei's Gobudo.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I'm glad to see that it's continuing through you and everybody's working out with you.
Yeah.
You know, you've traveled quite a bit. I was looking at your website, and I just knew because I literally bumped into you in Okinawa, and you traveled all around. A lot of that traveling, was it doing the demonstration in karate like you mentioned earlier, or was it in the competition, or what was a lot of the traveling?
Most of my traveling has been to train with either Nakazato Sensei or Gakia Sensei, but normally both. Mm-hmm. So when I go over there, I've got double duty. I've trained Kobudo in the mornings with Gakia Sensei, mm-hmm. and you know, when he was strong, and then in the evenings with Nakazato Sensei.
Okay.
So yeah, 90% of the time was training.
And you were doing, if I recall, you make an effort to go back to Okinawa at least about once a year.
To
stay fresh with everything, because it starts to fade if you go away for a year. I noticed that, you know, tonight, because I worked out with a Shorinryu group while I was in Okinawa, a little bit different branch than you guys are doing, but I can see the similarities. But I can also tell that if you don't do it and go back and check, maybe you forget this move or move.
Sure.
I've been doing the Shoryu mostly since I've been back in the U.S.
Yeah, that's why there's always discrepancies, because people, they learn it at the same time, they learn it the same way, and then they go and they practice it differently.
Right.
And, you know, so that's just the way the beast is.
And a few years go by before they get back together and compare notes. Yeah. By then, they're set in their ways.
Yes, that's correct. You hit it on the head.
So, when was the first time you went to Okinawa? Because now it's a yearly thing, but...
I went in 1990.
Okay.
It was my first trip, and it was for the Uchinan Chutaikai, or the Okinawan People's Festival.
Okay.
So it was an amazing event. I believe they said 10,000 people were on stage during the 3 days demonstrating.
Wow. Was that something? Now, the Okinawan Taikai, that was just not for karate people. Was that for all Okinawan people that had gone out, or was that just... Or was that...
Just, the karate, it was just karate.
The karate group.
Karate,
okay.
And Kobudo, you know.
Okay.
Yep.
Right.
But what it was they brought all the Okinawans, or invited all the Okinawans who had gone off to America, Argentina, Europe, wherever. Mm-hmm. They brought them all back, and then they got, for the first time, they assembled all these tenthons, under one roof, you know, without fighting each other.
And that's got to be an effort.
It was
probably the biggest accomplishment.
Yeah, there was over, you know, there was probably a dozen tenth dons.
Wow.
And I believe out of those dozen, the only one that's still alive is Nakazato Sensei.
Wow.
Yeah, the rest of them passed on, so.
Wow.
That was 24 years ago, 25 years ago already.
Looking for a way to gain an edge on the competition? Want to give your body some much-needed relief and relaxation? Try Medical Resort ATEC, Okinawa's specialist in sports therapy and wellness care. ATEC offers customizable massage therapy. Try their oxygen chamber for increased metabolism and faster recovery from injuries. Or take their stretching course to improve flexibility. ATEC is used by professional athletes from the Ryukyu Golden Kings, FC Ryukyu, and Ryukyu Corazon. Stop into their center Monday through Saturday at 12830 Oroku in Naha City, Okinawa. Call 098-859-1890 or visit them on the web at www.sanso-atac.com. That's www.sanso-atac.com.
Oh, the video. I saw a couple of videos you had on the website competing with the, and I saw the name, it was Hard Contact Karate. Was that what it was? It looked like you guys were wearing the Koshki armor.
That's what it was.
But there's also gloves and the foot pads, or was that?
That was optional.
Okay.
Yeah, so some of the fights I didn't wear gloves, and some of them I did. Depends on if we were kind of changing them, loaning them out back and forth, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they weren't mandatory.
Okay.
Yeah, they had these like little knit ones. Just, and one was white and one was red, just a significant, you know.
To tell the different people apart?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like the Aka and the Shiro fighter, so.
There were some good matches on there, a couple of nice knockouts too, but I gotta ask about the cartwheel. Where did that come from? That's the first time I've seen that in a karate match.
Yeah, you know, people say Billy Blanks started that, doing that, but I had never heard of Billy Blanks or saw Billy Blanks do that, and I did that one time. I was fighting in the ring at what they used to call black belt challenge matches back in the day, and I was down in Racine fighting in Kyron Davis's show, and we had gotten so far behind, it was a team fight, that I just was trying to entertain the crowd, and so
okay.
I threw this cartwheel, and I happened to hit the guy.
with the foot or the hand?
With the foot.
With the foot going over.
Yeah, and then I did it again at another one in during the World Championship fight that Rick Rufus fought here in Waukesha. And I hit the guy with both feet.
Wow.
Yeah, and knocked him down, and the crowd kind of went crazy. So ever since then, I kind of got known for that.
That's your signature move?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you still pulling it off when you're sparring the guys here?
No, I have not tried that in a good decade.
Well, I know you had a pretty serious operation on your hip a couple years ago that didn't put you out but slowed you down for a couple months.
Yeah, I actually had a hip replacement in 2007 and it didn't go right, and so they had to redo it in 2008.
Wow.
And then 3 years later, 2010, I did my other hip. So I've got three hip replacements actually.
Wow, three hip replacements or two hips?
Yeah.
And that's not a fun surgery. I had a bad hip, and I had an operation that is a precursor to try to head off the replacement, because I had it when I was in my mid-20s.
Sure.
And they called it an arthrotomy, but it's basically the same injury. So I have the big half moon scar on my hip, and that's not a fun one.
No, it's not. Long recovery. Yeah. You know, years recovery before your muscles come back. So.
Yeah. But you're back at it now.
Back at it. You got to be thankful. If it was 50 years ago, we probably wouldn't be able to do karate anymore.
Right.
Couldn't do the surgery. So.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
What was it? Oh, what would you call it? The black belt challenge matches.
Yeah.
What is that? Is that, was this something they called it in a tournament, or were you guys calling each other out?
No, these were they just called it a black belt challenge, but they were fought in the ring, in a boxing ring.
Okay.
And it was kind of in the middle of kickboxing, you know, American kickboxing and the point karate tournaments, because you could hit the guy as hard as you wanted, but you still had the 4 ounce gloves. So.
Okay.
But it also they call points, so it wasn't a continuous thing, but they were exciting matches. You know, people used to love to watch those. They went over, a lot of times they went over better than kickboxing, you know, as far as the audience.
Because of the technique or the speed of it?
Yeah,
or?
The speed, the technique. People could relate to it because they can see, you know, when a point is called, they understand, you know, oh, okay, I get it, he hit him in the head or he kicked him in the face, you know, rather than the continuous, you know, with a boxing kick.
Because it's really hard to tell what's going on with the continuous, because you got the judges in the corner with with the little tickers, and nobody knows until the end.
Until the end, right.
So were they knockout matches, or was it just
some
just
were,
points?
Some were. Okay. Some were knockouts and some were not. Sometimes if you knock the guy out, you lost 3 points.
Okay.
Yeah. And if the guy couldn't continue, then you get disqualified. But there was others where if you knocked him out, you won.
Okay.
I had a few of those that I... did well at.
So. Oh, that's good. And you got to remember which rule you're fighting under in the middle. I guess if you get hit too hard, you might switch rules in the middle.
Yeah, always know the rules before you go.
Everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, coworker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks. Remember, if you have an upcoming seminar, tournament, or other martial arts event, let us know, and we'd be happy to announce it on the program. And now, back to the show.
South Africa. One of the places you went was South Africa?
Yeah.
I did a tour with Kuba Sensei, who's a Goju practitioner.
Okay.
I was real good friends with one of his top students, who was acting as translator, and they invited me to tag along. Imtiaz Abdullah is the one who organized that.
Okay.
When you were over there, what were you guys? What were you doing? Which group were you with?
Well, you know, as it turned out, the Shorinkan has a bunch of students over there, and Pat Haley and Doug Perry Senseis were going over. They brought a group. They asked me to go, and it was at my own expense. So to beat that a little bit, I have a branch in the Kobodo in South Africa.
Okay.
So I went a few days early, 4 or 5 days early, spent time with them, trained, taught us, you know, Gashku there. Mm-hmm. And that helped me afford to, you know, to go. And then I spent the rest of the time with the Shawnee guys. So.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I remember one of the seminars I went to, it was primarily Goju people. You know, I was the oddball, but I was hanging around with all of them. But uh-huh. I saw a couple of people with the Shawnee patches. Those guys showed up in Cape Town.
Okay.
So I'm not sure which towns you were in, but that's where I saw those guys.
Yeah, we flew into Cape Town, and my Kobodo branch is real close to there. Mm-hmm. And the Shorenkan, though, they're pretty spread out. There's quite a few locations. Mm-hmm. This, Port Elizabeth, a couple other places.
Karate seems to be really big in that country.
Yes.
What year were you over there?
Oh, I think it was just maybe 3 years ago.
Okay, so yeah, so I was over there about 2 years ago, so okay. about the same time.
Yeah.
But it was really, I didn't know that much about it when I went over there. I guess I didn't realize that apartheid went on until the 90s. Mm-hmm. And there's still a lot of segregation.
A lot of angst. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. Mm-hmm. But karate seems to be one of the things that's starting to bring people together, because before the apartheid, all the sports were separated, including karate. So you'd have the black, or what they would call the black dojos, and then the white dojos, and you couldn't cross over. Yeah. But now you're starting to see some of the people come together, and I think that's maybe one of the good things for the country, that they can start partnering up a little bit.
Yeah, it's nice. It's always nice to see that. You know, you don't want to see segregation. At least right. I don't anywhere. Right. Unfortunately, it exists. But if they're moving in the right direction, it's good for everybody. I believe.
Absolutely. What about some of the other places you were in? Or Australia, Europe?
Mm-hmm. Spent time in Australia. I was with Sensei Yamashita still then.
And that was earlier on in your karate career.
That was
your first international trip.
1988. Yeah, okay. First international trip. And we spent 4 weeks there. Went to Brisbane, went to Melbourne, went to Sydney, and did seminars all over. We were on the Wide World of Sports over there. And,
oh, wow.
Ernie Reyes Jr. and Sr. were along, and Bill Wallace, so I got to spar with Bill Wallace and hang out with him. He was my roommate for a few times.
Very nice.
Yeah, and I demonstrated with Ernie in their show, put on a wig and did some skits with him.
Wait, a wig? Because you've got your hair cut since the last time I saw you. Yeah. So was it a bald wig?
No, it was a...
You're known for the hair halfway down the back.
Yeah, no, it was a big green one, if I remember right. Big green afro. So, and we... That's what we did there, was we just taught, and you know, we did some sightseeing, of course, but for the most part it was a seminar every weekend, and then little dojo seminars during the week.
Traveling around different ones, doing a little demonstration and working.
I think we were on like 14 airplanes while we were there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You didn't do the drive all the way around.
No.
That would take forever.
Yeah.
I haven't been there, but I heard that they have like the world's longest, straightest road where it's 2,000 miles and it doesn't turn. It's just...
Oh, that must be boring. But yeah, so Australia was fun, and then, you know, Europe a few times, went to Scotland, did that for a competition, went to Italy for competition, went to Spain and Portugal for competition, Greece for competition, so I think I've been maybe five trips to Europe, five or six.
Well, that's a lot. The competition, was that more of the full contact or the hard contact, the koshki, or is that the kata, or a little bit of everything?
Each one was different. I did spar in Scotland, but I competed in the Kobodo and the empty hand kata. Mm-hmm. And in Italy, I fought and actually knocked my guy out and was disqualified, and got second place. Mm. Should have had the gold medal there, but. Anyway, down he went, and that was the end of the gold medal.
It wasn't a dive, was it? I see there sounds to be a little bit of resentment there.
Yeah. I don't know. If I watched that, I don't know. But I guess I clipped him pretty good. So, and then Greece, I just was coaching my students. They did well. And Scotland, I was also coaching. Or not Scotland. Portugal and Spain, I was coaching. Mm. So.
Which group were you competing in? Was it this group that's trying to do the...
I'm not sure what it was. WUCO. Now, then it changed to something else. They were trying to get everything standardized for the Olympics. Was that the group?
Yeah, it was that group. I don't think they ever really did get it together.
Right.
They tried to go under the Pancration umbrella because that's a Greek art.
Okay.
So the games were going back to Greece. They thought that they'd try to do that. Mm. Make everybody happy, but I guess it didn't work. So.
Yeah. Like you mentioned earlier about the trying to get all the tenthons in the same room without fighting. That's the thing about karate as compared to Taekwondo or Judo or some other martial art, where those, the Korean government can say how it is, and therefore all Taekwondo is, or the Kodokan says how it is, and all Judo is going to go along. Mm-hmm. With karate, you just have too many groups and too many personalities.
That's absolutely correct. And if all they have to do is agree on a set of rules. It would have been in the Olympics, you know, three generations ago, but they can't agree on it, so.
Right. It's good and it's bad.
Yeah.
Because one, it doesn't get, I guess, the recognition as far as the sports side of it that it could, that it should get. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if it wasn't the Olympics, everyone would probably switch towards the sports side and away from the traditional side.
Yeah, we'd lose the art.
Yeah.
And the old Okinawans are very keen to that, and they'll express that to you. They'll tell you they don't like competition. Mm. You know, they think that making everyone's karate the same is a bad thing. Mm.
Looking for great entertainment? Want to find the best deals on food and drinks? Use the PubPal app to find great establishments near you. View daily specials, find live bands, karaoke, even poetry. If you're looking for something to do, PubPal is the answer. And it's only a click away. Download the app on the Apple Store and get the Android app on Google Play. And don't forget to like them on Facebook. Visit PubPalUSA.com to find out more. That's PubPalUSA. PubPalUSA.
You know, that's a real good point. And the Okinawans, I don't know if it's the right word for it, but kind of have a chip on their shoulder, even for the Japanese and the other people when they come in. So you really have to kind of prove yourself and show you're serious about it before they let you in the door.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're trying to build I'm sure you heard this, but the Okinawans are trying to build another Budokan.
Really? No, I haven't heard that.
Yes, because, well, the Budokan now is owned by the Japanese government.
Oh.
So they have all these Japanese arts in there, and they want an Okinawan one that is strictly Okinawan karate.
Wow. I hadn't heard that. That'd be great. Are it's still going to be in Naha?
It's going to be not far from the other one. It's between that one and the airport.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's not very far.
No, it's
nothing's not very far.
That's true. That's true. But I don't know how it's coming. I haven't asked anybody lately, but I know last year that was the big talk in April, just in April here.
Well, that would be something. But that the Budokan as it is, that's a great building.
Yeah.
And I think it really has helped. You know, because the people that weren't able to have their own dojos or have somewhere to work out, because look, your average house, your average apartment in Okinawa is a little bit smaller footprint than here in the U.S.
Yeah.
And a lot of these guys were real high ranks but didn't necessarily have somewhere to work out. You know, Yogi Sensei was a real good example mm-hmm. of that, where he goes over and has classes at the Budokan just about every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that he'd be able to do that at his house.
Right, no.
But
no, we've been to his house and it's about as big as this office.
Right.
So yeah.
Right. So I think it has helped. Is it going to be too much, though? I mean, because it's not always full. It's not like they're desperate for the space.
Yeah, I think it's more of a cultural thing.
Yeah.
You know, it just, they don't want to be... They don't want to lose the Okinawan traditions
mm-hmm.
and the Okinawan style.
Mm-hmm.
I know I read something real recently about, who was it? One of the old masters had written just a straight up nasty letter to the Japanese government saying, you're screwing this up, you're screwing that up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you need to come to Okinawa and learn how to do this before you go mm-hmm. have any of the competition,
mm-hmm.
you know.
I can definitely see that the Japanese really try to do it, want to do it their way, mm-hmm. and the Shotokan guys have a pretty big say in the way things are going on. But the Okinawans really feel it is theirs,
yeah.
originally.
Absolutely.
And I think though that maybe you disagree or maybe you agree that it gets in the way a little bit because there are a lot of people that travel to Okinawa because it's the mecca of karate. And they want to, whatever style they're from, whatever country you're from, you know that it started in Okinawa. So mm-hmm. if someone comes from the U.S., South Africa, Europe, they want to go to Okinawa. But I think the Okinawans have a little, maybe that chip on the shoulder is a little bit too big sometimes, thinking the Japanese tried to steal this from them mm-hmm. and these other people might be also. And so maybe they're a little bit too standoffish.
It's possible, you know. You know, when I started getting really close with Gakia Sensei and, you know, training with him as often as I could, bringing him here, me going there, mm-hmm. spending lots of time, he got calls from people here saying that I was getting taught too much and that I was getting taught more than the Okinawan people, and that wasn't right.
Mm.
And he said, well, he's my student and I'm going to teach him any way I want. So, but yeah, that was an interesting conversation.
Wow. I bet. Well, you know, the thing is, I guess the Okinawan people can go down the street and work out with him, but if they're not doing it, yeah. and you're over there working out all the time,
yep.
yeah, you're going to get taught more.
Yeah.
That's all for the first half of my interview with Kyoshi Niels Stoltzmark. Thanks to Mr. Stoltzmark and everyone at his dojo for their hospitality during my short visit. Tune in next week for the second half of our discussion, where Mr. Stoltzmark talks more about the history of Shorin-Ryu, Shorin-Kan Karate, and Matayoshi Kabuto. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Nihidebiru and Mataya. Everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks.